How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 42 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review. Hopefully 5 stars. That's a nice review. If you're feeling like it too, find us on audioboom.com as well. You can go to normantranscript.com to follow my Thunder coverage there. Remember, I'm on every day of the week now, off weekends, but shows Monday through Friday. This is the last one of the week. Today's guest is a good one. So this summer, a man in his mid or late 20s famously left Oklahoma City for an employment opportunity that he deemed better in the Bay Area. Now he's associated with the Warriors and not the Thunder, and that man's name is Anthony Slater. We miss you in OKC, bud.
They're burning my newspaper still, right?
How many times have you used that joke?
Not many. You know who originated that joke? That was the Enes Kanter one. I'm burning your papers. I mean, there's been, you know, especially when it happened, there was a ton of just random ones. Somebody said they're not eating in my restaurant anymore. Can I get a plaque at Legacy Grill at least?
You should get a plaque at Legacy Grill. I will campaign for that all year. If I don't know how much pull the Norman Transcript has at Legacy Grill, but we'll try to make it happen.
I think I read something about like hundreds of Oklahomans will be honored there. I mean, Oklahoma's got a lot of famous people, but you know, if we're talking up to about 500 people, I can maybe get like a corner plaque, like near the bathroom or something.
Yeah, you're like what, a tier or two below Mickey Mantle, I'd say.
Yeah, you know, I'll get there.
So how's the new gig for those who don't know? Though I imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you might at least. Anthony covers the Warriors for Bay Area News Group now, but until only a few months ago, he was the Thunder beat writer for the Oklahoman, so he's kind of the perfect person to talk to on this podcast in crossover week. We're having him on. We're obviously going to talk about the Warriors. We're going to talk about the Thunder. How's the new gig been?
It's been awesome. You know, the Warriors are very you know, their PR staff wins, like I think the last 2 years was one PR staff of the year. And it's kind of a rightful honor. I mean, I'm in town. I've already kind of met up with the GM. You know, Kerr's doing something next week, and I'm supposed to meet up with Pachulia. I just talked to their rookie. Hopefully, going to talk to Mike Brown coming up. I mean, it's just like they're kind of shoveling me a bunch of stuff where it's kind of really getting me acclimated to the team, the organization. I've been down at the facility a bunch of times, and you know, this is still, we're talking, you know, almost 2 weeks before training camp opens up. So it's been good. And then obviously back in the Bay, you know, weather's nice. And, you know, I got the Colin Kaepernick controversy swirling right down the road. So it's kind of, you know, maybe the center of the sports world in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be just, honestly, that's got to be exhausting to cover the Kaepernick stuff. And I know Victor Oladipo did a sit-down interview, I think it was on Wednesday, with Complex Sports, and Oladipo, he talked a little bit about Kaepernick, and he said he thinks some NBA players are going to follow in his footsteps and try out some, you know, at least from a protest standpoint. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this goes across all sports, because there are going to be reverberations, you have to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what NBA players do, because, you know, as I know, some people have talked about, the NBA is a lot more, they back their players a lot more than the NFL does. So, you know, you'd like to, with Adam Silver as commissioner, I mean, they could really, you know, maybe do some choreographed type stuff. I mean, you know, they've worn the Black Lives Matter shirt before, the I Can't Breathe stuff. So it's not like the NBA players haven't done stuff in the past, but maybe this Kaepernick stuff ramps it up a little bit. And it has been, you know, I haven't been exhausted down at like Santa Clara, you know, at Niners facility covering it. But, you know, I've had to always, you know, monitor the webs because, I mean, you know how the Warriors work where, you know, Durant says something in Austin about it. Draymond Green tweets something about it. I was at TechCrunch on, I don't even know if you know, do you watch the show Silicon Valley?
No, I've heard great things, but I've never actually watched it.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really that into it either, but I guess one of the best episodes of it is at TechCrunch Disrupt in San Francisco. You know, it's just some, like, tech conference. And Curry spoke down at it. It's on, like, Pier 48 right near AT&T Park in San Francisco. And Curry said he would most likely stand during the national anthem. But it was kind of my first run-in with, you know, I'm used to covering, okay, whatever Durant says, that's news. Whatever Westbrook says, that's news. And I now am having to react to the Steph Curry stuff. And I feel like early on when I got out here, it's like he'd say something. I'd be like, ah, that's not that much. And then people would be, like, talking about it. Well, he was, you know, he said some stuff, including he backed Hillary Clinton at TechCrunch, and like that, it just kind of became huge news. So,
yeah, I mean, it's incredible the power and the voice that athletes have nowadays with social media and with the way that, you know, not just social media from their point, but even with the way that the media can give an even further voice to them because of, you know, our social media accounts and you combine it with theirs. And it's just amazing the travel and the word and the voice that, that an athlete can have. And like, that's something that I think is really interesting with the Kaepernick situation, or the fact that NBA players, or at least in recent history, they're more prone to protest. They're more prone to get a little bit more political than NFL players. It's going to be really fascinating to see how this develops from a observationally political standpoint in the NBA.
Yeah, you want to know how quickly it can move. So, you know, Curry's talking at this tech conference, and he says, the host goes, it was just a lightning round. Like, he didn't even give his real opinion on the presidential election. She just was going, you know, she was like Magic Johnson or Larry Bird, and he gave an answer. You know, Shaq or Kareem, he gave an answer. And she was like, Hillary or Trump, and he went, Hillary. And that's it. That's all he said, and I tweeted out, Steph Curry asked Hillary or Trump, ? Curry, Hillary. Okay. And then Hillary Clinton retweets it with, glad to have you on the team, Steph Curry. And, you know, so that's now a presidential-elect retweet me. And then, like, my feed still right now, this moment, is just absolutely flooded with the most outrageous political gossip and commenters right now. It's just crazy, kind of like you said, how quickly, how much what they say matters and how quickly we can now get it out there.
Well, politics Twitter is probably the only thing less reasonable than sports Twitter.
It's gross. There's so many memes and you know, commenters in my feed right now.
Well, so let's get to some basketball talk. What I'm wondering is, since I imagine that you've gotten a little bit of a taste of the Warriors fan base now, and you obviously know the Thunders really well. Of course, the Warriors games are going to be the biggest games of the year for Thunder fans this year. November 3rd is going to be huge. That's in Golden State. First one is in Oklahoma City. That's in February. That's going to be even bigger for obvious reasons. Do Warrior fans feel the same way about the OKC games? Do you think that's the biggest game of the year for them, or among the biggest, or are they going to be more pumped for, say, you know, Cleveland coming into town, whenever that is?
I think the Oklahoma City game, like, intrigues them, but I'd probably still guess that Cleveland, maybe on Christmas, or maybe the one, I think they play MLK Day here in Oakland, are the biggest because, you know, they're kind of out for revenge against Cleveland. But they understand the storyline of Oklahoma City one, and, you know, there's kind of an earned arrogance to the Warriors fans because of the last 2 years. You know, you win the title and then you win 73 games. Obviously, they didn't win it all, but, you know, title, 73 games, then you steal Kevin Durant in free agency. They're really confident right now. So no game scares them. I think that they want to see Durant pound the Thunder because, you know, they've kind of been, you know how fans are, they've kind of inserted themselves into this whole Durant saga and, you know, stocked out some Thunder fans and, you know, had plenty of arguments back and forth about why Durant left Oklahoma City and, you know, why he'd want to come to the best place in the country to come play, right? That's, you know, maybe the opinion of them. So I think, you know, they're probably the game they're looking forward to most right now is game one against the Spurs at home. They get to see Kevin Durant and Oracle in a Warriors uniform for the first time. But, you know, the Thunder games will still intrigue them, but it's not like life or death like I feel like it is back there in Oklahoma City.
Oh, it's definitely life and death in Oklahoma City with those games. There's no question. Like if the Thunder somehow win the season series against the Warriors, I can't even imagine, you know, what the reaction would be locally in Oklahoma City. It would be crazy.
It's like those, you know, it's like those rivalries where, you know, the OU fans will be, you know, will be like, you know, if you just beat Texas, or who's the rivalry where it's like, if you just beat them every year, then, you know, you've done your job.
Like, you know, I went to Missouri and Mizzou, Kansas was like that. When at least in basketball, where like when we were really good my senior year, but we were not great. It was the Mike Anderson years, and we weren't great. But there were years, like especially when Mizzou basketball is no good and Kansas like winning the Big 12, and this was in the Big 12 years when Mizzou and Kansas played every year. Like if Mizzou beat Kansas, like that's all people cared about. Mizzou could finish last in the Big 12, but if Mizzou beat Kansas, then it was a successful season.
Yeah, I feel like this year for Thunder fans, a successful season is beating the Warriors at least, what, twice? And then just the Warriors losing to somebody. Obviously, the Thunder fans would prefer it would be the Thunder, but just I think they just don't want Kevin Durant to win a title.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It's funny the way that it kind of transfers to the fans, right? Like, it always does. It starts out as an individual thing and an individual decision, or I should say an individual decision meshed with a team decision and, you know, a company decision. And it always transfers to the fans, and that's what gives it lifeblood, right? The fans wanting more about it, the fans wanting – I guess we're not blameless in this either, because we're sitting here on a podcast on September 15th, which will go up September 16th, and we're still talking about it. But it's you know, it's just interesting the way that – that's the way that this happens. It's really – at some point, probably relatively quickly, it transfers to the fans, and that's really what gives it a life.
Yeah, and I mean – yes, and the fans maybe go from a more irrational standpoint and have their more irrational opinions about it. But like you said, I mean, we're to blame because, look, the NBA, you know, it's obviously not as scripted as the WWE, but it's kind of become this, like, drama-filled thing where, like, stuff goes way beyond, you know, the X's and O's of the basketball court. I mean, it is like the Draymond Green, Steven Adams stuff last year. You know, the Mavericks-Thunder series last year was, like, not competitive at all, but it was, like, fascinating because you had, like, Carlisle coming out and, like, Mary, he was using Barry Trammell to try to call the Thunder dirty, and then the Charlie Villanueva getting in the Westbrook-Cameron Payne dance moves. And it's just, like, now, like, this Durant, Westbrook, you know, it's like a movie where these guys were these like tag team dudes that were like best friends, you know, they were like, there's such a long history together, and then like one takes a heel turn and now they're like these like enemies that are, you know, we have an exact time where we're going to see like the climax battle between the two. And we're going to pump it up so hard. Do you understand? Like, I know you do, but those Thunder Warriors games, especially the first one in Golden State, and then the first one back in Oklahoma City, are going to be pumped up so hard by everyone in the media.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I mean, I'm going to be one of the people pumping them up. So.
Me as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be so, it's so important locally, though. I mean, it really is. Just from, look, I mean, I saw your colleague, Tim Kawakami, who I think does really great work, and certainly does not care what other people think about him.
No,
and I think he's great, though I don't think he cares that I think that. But he was, I saw him go on a rant recently, which is something that, a discussion that I've had with people before, and I think it's a really smart point, which is that we've kind of turned the word narrative into a curse word. No one talks about the narrative being a good thing. People say, well, the narrative is this, but the real truth is here. You know, that's the way it's always phrased when we talk about the narrative in sports, or really the narrative in stories. But in reality, like, we're still storytellers. Like, a narrative doesn't have to be a bad thing. A narrative should be true. A narrative shouldn't be embellished. We should be telling the truth, and we should be telling the full truth. We shouldn't be telling part of the truth, and we shouldn't be telling our own truth. We should be telling the truths of others and the truth that's reality. But we still want a narrative. And this is a true narrative. And it's a fascinating narrative. And it's always fascinating. Like, you bring up WWE, which is funny. Like, did you see John Cena's monologue at the ESPYs, which I thought was really funny?
I saw someone, but refresh what you're talking about. I remember seeing his monologue a little at the beginning.
He did this like meta bit on talking about how, you know, people talk about how WWE is fake and how the NBA, everything is real. But he kind of had like an over the shoulder camera opposing it with images of all NBA players when he was making points that you would think would be about WWE guys. It was about how, you know, when things fall, we just create a villain, and a photo of Kevin Durant comes up.
I remember that.
Yeah, so it was something like that. So it's funny you bring up WWE. I mean, it's amazing the narratives of the NBA. Like, it lends itself, and there are other sports that I love. Like, I love baseball. I love baseball, but baseball just doesn't do this very well. Like, baseball doesn't lend itself to stars very well, and it doesn't lend itself to you know storylines like Durant or anything like that. You know, aside from maybe A-Rod. A-Rod was probably the best thing that baseball had.
Yeah.
But baseball doesn't do it as well, and it's something that brings a lot of intrigue to the NBA.
That, to me, that's not baseball's fault. I mean, that's just the sport they are, and they can't really like play to what they are. And I mean, it's the same with football. They're all wearing helmets. Like, I know Kaepernick obviously now is kind of in the swirling controversy, but you know, in general, the NBA, way more than the other sports, is star driven because, you know, one guy can absolutely completely affect the game way more. They're in tank tops and shorts. They're in these really compact arenas. They're always, you know, they're just way more visible, and like the gameplay is just way more individualistic, where, you know, the stuff LeBron does is very unique to how Kevin Durant plays. And like, you just see it so much more in depthly than like, yeah, there's Mike Trout up and there's Mike Trout going to chase a fly ball. Like, yeah, I mean, he's doing it like quicker than other center fielders, but it's just like, there's no way baseball could suddenly like market its guys. I mean, that is, I think the NBA does it smartly, but I think the NBA has played the cards to do it well.
I think that's a fair point, but I think we'd also be remiss not basically bringing up the Jordanification of the league and David Stern basically figuring out a model that worked and going with it and really helping the league blow up in doing so.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm saying, in the sense of like the NBA's figured out how to market it, but the NBA is also the perfect sport to do, in a sense, like, you know, this, it is what does, like, they look, I'm not saying it's scripted at all, but it is what the WWE does. It knows, look, we can't, you know, they know that they can't promote, like, you know, the realness of what's going on, so they got to promote, like you said, these villains and stars and, like, you know, these scenes and stuff where, this season, Durant Westbrook is going to be promoted as, like, you know, this former colleague who spurned the city is coming back, you know, and Westbrook, this, everyone kind of knows how Westbrook is, but this, like, passionate, loyal guy is, like, here to stake his claim. Like, if they meet in a series, it's going to be hilarious.
I know. And we're all cogs in the machine, Slater. We're all cogs.
I'm not even blaming anyone. And this one actually has a lot of meat to it, too. That's the thing. I mean, but it's going to be, I'm pumped for it.
Yeah.
It's why we watch. It's why we watch, you know. It's why baseball's not as intriguing anymore, because, you know, I still follow baseball, but I follow it on my phone. Like, hey, who's like, you know, oh, somebody just hit a double. Like, I'm not watching the games. I'm not like super intrigued. Like, oh, you know, Justin Verlander is like out for revenge. You know, that's just like not how baseball works.
Yeah. I think baseball is also easier to follow without watching the games. Like basketball, it's really hard. It's not even hard. It's impossible to look at a box score and say, oh, this guy had, you know, 20 points and 7 boards and 5 assists and he must have played well. I mean, that's, you can't do that. You can't tell just from a conventional box score if somebody played well. But baseball, you see a guy goes 3-for-4 and hits a home run and you know he played well. Baseball, you can look up his numbers and there are so many, it lends itself to numbers so much more, so you can, you know, look up a player's WAR or look up a player's UZR and see how they are on defense and like all these things that you can do. And basketball, you just, you know, the watching the games argument, it just makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, for sure.
So you know Kevin well, obviously. And one thing I think is interesting, and I'm not sure it gets talked about quite enough, people say he's going to fit really seamlessly into the Warriors' offense, and I'm not totally convinced of that. Like, look, they're going to be great, and they're going to figure it out, and they're going to be an amazing offense. But I do think there's going to be a learning period, and I think they're going to be good during the learning period, no question. But whether it was because of circumstance or habit or whatever, Kevin's really been an isolation player for most of his career, and now he's a remarkably efficient isolation player. So it's not a bad thing that he's an isolation player. It's not a knock, but he's been one inside the Thunder offense, and people talk about how much, you know, better he'll be without the ball often, and I think in the long term that makes sense, and it's probably right. But I also think there has to be a learning period. I don't think you can just change who you've been for 9 years as a pro without some amount of time for an adjustment. And look, the offense is going to be really good at all times, no matter what, no question. And Kevin Durant is going to be really good at all times, no matter what, because he's Kevin Durant. But how long do you think it takes before the offense is chugging along and it's like at its absolute peak? Do you think it happens immediately? Do you think it takes half a season? Do you think it doesn't happen until the following year?
Yeah, I mean, probably the following year if we're talking about absolute peak, just because, you know, that doesn't mean they're not winning the title. I'd pick them to win the title. But, you know, a lot of times you need to face really good teams a lot, you know, to like kind of figure yourself out completely. And to me, that doesn't really happen until the playoffs where you're going back to back to back with teams and you're like, okay, this is how they're really starting to play us. Now, how do we adjust? How do we find where we are best? So I really don't think it'll happen to the playoffs. And they, you know, if you're the Warriors, you might, you know, kind of want to be tested in that first round a little bit by a good team. And I'm not sure they will be. We'll see who's in that 7-8 slot. But the other thing, as far as Durant fitting in, though, I think that Steve Kerr can maybe kill two birds with one stone in a sense here. They got two issues right now. The bench is a lot thinner than last year because they had to give up a lot of guys. Their strength in numbers is kind of down. And, you know, Durant, you know, obviously he kind of loves his isolation type ball. I think Kevin Durant's going to play a lot with the second unit. And he'll get his isolation, his, like, you know, mid-post, you know, 14-foot, you know, back, you know, one-legged fadeaway type plays and really run the show maybe with the second unit. I mean, you could argue maybe that Kerr does that with Klay Thompson, but I feel like that might be the slot to put Durant. And then other than that, I also think that the other Warriors, the Currys, the Thompsons, the Draymonds, early in the season at least, I think are going to be really trying to force feed, and that might end up being a problem at times, but I think they're going to tell Durant, shoot all you want, do it as much as you want. They're going to be promoting it to him because, number one, they need to make him comfortable as quick as possible, and two, he is on a one-year deal, so you don't want to frustrate him at any point.
Right. That's what's interesting with the one-year deal, and I don't think that necessarily means that he signed the deal with the intention of leaving. It just makes the most sense financially because the cap is supposed to go up next year, and on top of that, he can get a 10-year max instead of that 7 to 9-year max, which is worth about 5 percentage points of the cap less. So he can make a lot more money, and that's the reason the one-year deal was coming no matter what his decision was going to be. But I do think what's interesting is, like, yeah, I mean, you kind of alluded to it. I mean, going back to just kind of another baseball analogy, like, you need to see your times through the lineup, right? So you know, your first time through the lineup, you're going to be facing different types of pitches. And that's kind of the first time they face these teams. People are going to be feeling them out. Because something that people aren't really talking about also, I think, is that the Warriors aren't going to play the exact same way that they played last year. I mean, people talk about Durant fitting into the Warriors, but the Warriors are going to have to fit into Durant too. It's going to be kind of a mutual adjustment for kind of Durant and then all of the existing players involved, because I don't think the Warriors are going to play the exact same style. Like, I think it would be silly to get Kevin Durant and play the exact same style. Like, Kevin Durant is an incredible player for a reason. You adjust to the way that he likes to play too. So I think there's going to be some kind of mutual adjustment, and they're going to meet in the middle. So I don't think that Kevin Durant is going to completely do without ISOs. They're not just going to – people say that he's going to be in the Harrison Barnes role. I mean, I guess, like, simplistically, he's going to be playing Harrison Barnes' position, but he's not going to be in the Harrison Barnes role. He's not just going to be a floor spacer. He's going to catch and shoot corner threes. They're going to let him get the ball at the top of the key and create and isolate. They're going to let him get the ball in the post. Like, he's on this side of LeBron, the best cross-court passer in the league. Like, think about how many open threes he can get for Klay Thompson on the opposite side of the court if you let him create and find those cross-court passes, swing passes around the perimeter. Like, they're going to work those things into their offense. So they're they're going to adjust a little bit too. And so I think I'm with you. I don't think they're going to reach their absolute peak in offense until next year. But I do think they're probably going to lead the league in offensive efficiency this year. But I also think there could be some struggles early, either individually from Durant or maybe just from the team, just because, I mean, it's an adjustment. And when guys adjust, when they change, there's struggles along the way. And I think that's a plausibility.
Yeah. But the truth of it is there's going to be struggles, and that's stuff for me to document, for everyone else around the team to document, like how that is going. But at the same time, like, they're going to struggle and, you know, beat the Bucks by 18. You know,
right.
And that's what's so dangerous about this team is they're not going to be near their peak, but they're still probably. I mean, is anyone not picking them to be the one seed in the West? So, you know, probably by a, like, relatively comfortable margin, as long as they're healthy. Which, to me, health is like the one thing that concerns me about the team, because obviously they're thin beyond their megastars, and you know, everyone kind of knows about Durant's foot troubles. Curry's kind of had some injury problems. Of, you know, obviously in the playoffs last year and even deeper. So that is what concerns me a bit more than maybe the other stuff does about this team. But if there's any, you mentioned, like, you know, people talking about, oh, Durant's just kind of slip into a Harrison Barnes role. Like, they didn't watch the Olympics, if that's their opinion on it. Because, like, this guy is a top 3-4-ish player in the world. And I think he's determined right now. And I think he's going to come out very aggressive. And I think very quickly he's going to become, you know, a lot of people may argue even more important than Curry on the team. Or, you know, I'm not talking about as far as, like, in the community, biggest name, whatever. But I just mean, I honestly think he might win the MVP this season.
I think that's viable. That's something I was going to ask you later, but let's do it now. Russell Westbrook has much better MVP odds than Kevin Durant right now. I think it's right now, Russell Westbrook, according to Bovada, has the best worst MVP odds in the league, I should say. I think he's 2-1. He was, at least the last time I checked, a couple of days ago. I want to say Curry and LeBron were 2 and 3, and Durant was number 4. If I gave you those odds, let's say I think Westbrook was 2-1, and Durant was 10-1. Which is the better bet in your mind? Because I think it's Durant, no question.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's way too high for Russ, but I mean, look, your favorite word, Russ does have that narrative around him right now, which is, you know, he stayed, he's going to stick it out, you know, with this roster that's flawed. And, you know, if he can, what would he have to drag them to? Like, the 3 seed? Would he have to get above, like, the Clippers?
I think it's plausible he could do it with the 4 seed if they win, like, 52 games. Like, I forget the last time a team outside of the top 3 actually had an MVP. It was like a really long time ago. I know the last team to win, the last MVP to come from a non-50 win team was Moses Malone in 1982. So that's been, you know, 34 yeah. years since that happened. But if they win like 52 and Russ has some, you know, 28 and, you know, 11 and 9 season or something like that, that's possible. But I don't know if that does happen. Like, that would be like an historic MVP coming from a 4 seed standpoint.
To me, that's the one that should have the 10-1 odds. Not say, like, Durant shouldn't have 2-1. Durant should probably have about like 5-1, 6-1 maybe. But to me, Westbrook's kind of a long shot in a sense of, like, I don't think the Thunder's going to rumble out and win 52. They might, but I do think there's going to be times where that offense is just going to be bogged with just that lack of shooting out there. You know, I think he's going to have, you know, very high usage, low point nights. And I just think, I mean, 2-1 just seems, that's just Vegas kind of preying on people just backing Russ because of the offseason storyline. And then as far as Durant goes, look, he's going to you know, him and Curry, it's the problem, you know, Griffin and Paul have every year. They'll probably cannibalize each other in a sense with some of the votes. But, you know, the truth is Durant kind of has a narrative behind him as well. I mean, he will be the story of the season. People will be following. If he just comes out and, like, you know, kind of defiantly just takes over and leads the team in scoring, and he's averaging 29 a game and they win 69 games, like, and he just looks really good all year, like, people are going to be like, you know, he kind of showed the country right there. And, like, yeah, he's the MVP for that. So I think there's a definite path for Durant to win it.
And here's the thing: if you're listening to this and you're a betting man, or maybe you're not, and you just wanna you wanna start maybe putting down a couple of bets, or you just enjoy the conversation or whatever it is, remember this. Vegas doesn't make its lines based on what it thinks will absolutely happen. It makes its lines based on how it can get the most people to bet on either side. So remember that when you look at these lines. This is not an exact prediction. It's what entices people to bet the most, and that kind of ties into what you were saying about Westbrook and him having the narrative behind him. What do you think of this Westbrook season? I've said
I can't wait. I can't wait to watch it.
I mean, I've said that I don't think his usage is going to be quite as crazy as a lot of people say it is. Like, I think he could lead the league in usage, but I see people – I don't think he's going to shoot quite as much as he did, like, when Kevin was hurt and Serge was hurt back into the end of 2015, and he was, you know, like a 40% usage, kind of like literally an all-time usage. I don't think we're going to see that. I think we saw a maturation process from him last year, and I think he was just a better facilitator and a smarter facilitator than he's ever been. And I thought shot selection improved also, and I just don't see why there'd be regression from that, because that was kind of a mental progression last year, and I don't see why that would fall back just because Kevin weren't there. And I think he's going to shoot more, no question, and he should shoot more, but I don't think we're going to see it all time. I think we're going to see a really good year from him because he's Russell Westbrook. But what do you think?
There'll be relapse games, and those will be fun to watch too, where, you know, like nothing's going well and Canner's off and he's just like, you know what, screw it, I'm going off right now, like nobody helping me. But the other, look, I covered that injury, that just crazy injury season that you're talking about, where at the end he was his usage was at an all-time high. He's got way better weapons around him now. I mean, I think they should and probably will dump it to Canner, you know, 6-7 times a game. I really think I think people are maybe underrating how much his production and usage is going to go up, because, look, you lost maybe the best scorer in the world. I think you can't waste what you have in Enes Kanter's offense. Obviously, people know his defensive deficiencies. But to me, when you're not really planning to win a title, Enes Kanter, the biggest problem with Enes Kanter is that when you get deep into the playoffs, other teams can try to play him off the court, like smart teams with all these weapons. But the thing is, that's not what the Thunder's trying to do. The Thunder's just trying to win 53 games in an NBA schedule where you're playing bad teams, you're playing teams who aren't planning for you. You can hide him more defensively. I think he's going to have a big year. So to me, that takes away from Russ there. I think they're going to use Steven Adams more, and they should, because he's become a better offensive player. Oladipo is kind of, you know, even though he's a two, or I mean, I don't know, he's kind of, I guess, like a combo, because the Magic tried to play him at point guard, but like, he's kind of high usage himself at times. So I agree with you that I think what Russ's numbers are going to look like has been a bit overrated, but I think he's going to have a really fun season. I'm really interested to just see the clips from you guys covering the team, just how he handles his new media obligations as like the face of a franchise. He's never ever been the face of the Thunder. I mean, that's always been Kevin Durant, and I think he's happily allowed Kevin Durant to do that, because that's just not who Russell Westbrook is. So I'm just very excited for the whole, you know, everything surrounding Russ this season as this new chapter. It's got, you know, I'm kind of a little bit jealous of you guys out there covering it. Obviously, I came to cover the story of the year out here, but I almost like wish I could have two bodies and cover both.
I know. It's also like, it's a really fun team to cover, because there are a lot of, I mean, aside, like Russ completely aside, like there are a lot of really good personalities. Like, I know you love Steven Adams, which who wouldn't love Steven Adams covering Steven Adams? Canner's great. Like, Anthony Morrow is a great guy to interview. Like, there are more guys too. Like, Collison's a great interview. There are a lot of guys on this team who are really good, just like interviews from a coverage perspective. I think it'll be just a fun year from that perspective. And on top of like all the stories and all the changes that are coming, Billy's a great interview too. So like, there's a lot of good coverage opportunities for people like us.
Yeah, and the other thing with that team this season is, like, I really think the fan base is going to be rejuvenated. I know you got there in the Spurs series, and that's when it, like, really cranked up, and that's kind of all you've seen the Thunder Arena as, but it was dull at times last year, and I felt like the fan base was a bit spoiled. They were just, you know, they weren't really allowing the Billy Donovan experience to kind of, you know, play itself out. I remember they were 3-3 and everyone was freaking out. Like, this isn't working. Why did we get rid of Scott Brooks? And like the arena, it was as quiet or just, I don't know, not as like invested in the team as I can remember. There's just grumblings about, you know, if Kyle Singler missed any shots, it was just like, oh. But I just think that the way this has turned this summer with Durant leaving, but then Westbrook staking his claim, and then now like they kind of have this young, exciting, tough team. To me, it's like kind of Memphis Grizzlies-y, and just how that grindhouse can kind of get going for its Memphis team, even though, you know, they know it's not like a team that's probably going to rumble off and win the title. Like, I just think the arena atmosphere, especially early in the season, and it will continue all the way as long as they play at least decently well. I think it's going to be a really, you know, fun home atmosphere this year.
So two quick questions for you before we go. First off, is what's your prediction for this team this year? Where do you think it falls?
We're talking Thunder?
Thunder, yeah.
Oh, 4-5. I think they should aim for that 4-5 pocket, so they can probably avoid, you know, that would have them avoid the Warriors, Spurs, and Clippers in the first round. And you know, get themselves a first round. If they can get to the second round, I think that's a hugely successful season. So I think that should be their aim, get to that 4-5 seed. And I think they can, you know, maybe. That they'd have to play really well. They'd have to be really healthy. But I'll guess 5, and then it's almost a selfish, because I think if they can get to that 5 and they can maybe win a first-round series, then we get to see Warriors Thunder in the second round, and that is just going to be fascinating to watch. Plus, I get it. You know, I get a couple – you know, I get about, a week back in Oklahoma City. I'd love that.
How many wins you got them at?
Man, what would the 5 seed need? Probably like
last year, Portland was a 5 at 44 wins, but that was a below average.
That was a down year. I was gonna say like 48, and then I was like, well, that get the 5. I'll go 48, and I'll say it gets the 5. I think that there's good teams in the West, but I think a lot of them are being overrated. I don't think Minnesota's ready to make like a huge jump.
I agree. I think Minnesota's like a 30-something win team this year.
Yeah,
and then they make their jump to 50 in a couple of seasons. But I think Wiggins needs another year, and LaVine needs another year, and Chris Dunn's just a rookie, and like Towns is amazing. But yeah, I'm with you. Like Minnesota, they basically have to like double their win total to jump to a 4 seed. I just don't think that's gonna happen.
Yeah. I like Utah, but you know, they're very injury prone, or they have been with this core. So we'll see with them. Portland, you know, do they remain? Like, people act like they had this incredible year last year, and they, you know, they did. Like, nobody, everyone was picking them to be like 13th in the West, and you know, like we said, they got fifth, but they only won 44 games. Like, that's not crazy. And they basically are bringing the same team back. So I think it's very possible that the Thunder could be a 4-5 with, 48 wins?
Yeah. No, I think 48 would get them to the 4 or 5 seed. I think that makes a lot of sense. And finally, last question for you before we head out. They play Thunder and Warriors. Play 4
November
times this year.
November 3rd, yeah.
Yeah, November 3rd, February 11th, and then a couple times after that. Or they play November 3rd, they play again in, when is it, January or something, and then they play a couple times in Oklahoma City after that. How many do you think the Thunder actually take any of those games, and you think they're on the road, or you think they take a home game?
I think they probably lose both in Oracle. The Thunder probably loses both in Oracle. And then I think they'll win the first one back in Oklahoma City. The Warriors play in Memphis the night before. It's the second night of a back-to-back. It's in and out of town. I think talking to the Warriors people, they're in Oklahoma. They put Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City for like 17 hours, basically his first trip back. It's like plop in after a night game against Memphis, and then you're gone by the next night. So I just think, as rabid as that fan base is going to be, at how anticipated that game is, how pumped up I expect Westbrook and that team to be, and then knowing that the Warriors are going to be, you know, like I said, just having played in Memphis, you know, 24 hours earlier, I'm going to give the Thunder, I'd pick them to win. Nobody ever knows that type of stuff. And then, I don't know, maybe they win the second one at home, too. It's the NBA regular season. You don't even know what the health is going to be like with these teams at this time. Somebody might be down with the sprained ankle. So I'll say Thunder win at least one.
Anything to plug before we go? Twitter handle, podcast, we're coming out. Anything else?
Yeah, I'll go with, I've created a podcast of my own. It's called Warriors All 82. I don't know how many Thunder fans are, you know, looking for some, you know, big time, everyday type Warriors coverage, but Warriors All 82 podcast, you can find it on iTunes. My Twitter handle is Anthony V. Slater. And, you know, I'll tweet out all my work there. So.
All right. Awesome. And thanks for coming on. Before we head out, this week was crossover week at the Locked On Podcast Network. So previews with other teams, obviously. Today was the Warriors. Next week, season preview week, I'm going to focus on a different area of the Thunder for each episode, starting with the guards on Monday. And remember, I'm on every day of the week now, Monday through Friday. Off weekends, if you're subscribed to the show, you'll be all good on getting those. You can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there under the sports tab on the site to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. Off for the weekend, but I'm back with you Monday for more Thunder and NBA talk. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.